I was afraid of this moment, but it has happened. I received an email to the ricob@gmail.com email account that we have from a guy named Pete. And Pete just simply wrote, thank you. And I'm like, oh, okay. What's he thanking me for? The Rico? I don't know what it is. And Pete writes, thank you, Evan. I learned that I was the one that bought your seats on SeatGeek.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm sorry you can't make it here. The section loves you. This is a once-in-a-lifetime for my brother and I. We're lifelong Met fans.
Oh, look at that.
As was our late father. The seats.
I'm even more.
The seats are in great hands.
this is awesome.
It makes me feel good until I remind myself what this poor guy paid on SeatGeek.
Everyone has a price.
I feel terrible about that.
It may not be a poor guy. Who knows what his father's inheritance was?
You know what else? Like, it's worth it. The seat I sit in is one of the best seats in the building. And he's going to get to watch a postseason game. So that actually does make me very happy. I'm happy for Pete. I'm happy for his brother. And if he is listening right now on his phone, what I will tell him, get a victory. Because if you get victories, Evan gets crazy. And if Evan gets crazy, you may become a lucky charm. And if you become a lucky charm, who knows where I take you?
Oh,
maybe the next time you go to a Met game, it won't cost you anything. You never know.
So if the Mets lose, you block at his email?
Yeah. If the Mets lose, he's dead to me, right, T?
Right, you're dead to me.
I'm just kidding.
You sat in my seats and you brought bad luck.
That does make me feel good, because when I told you guys that, hey, I'm not going to go to the game, obviously, I'm going to sell them, I think there was this level of, you can't sell it to a Philly fan. No, I can't control that. I can't control who buys it. And it's good to know that they're lifelong Met fans. Anyhow, we'll keep you posted on this Met game, but we got a lot to do, including a Cinco.
Cinco de Fivo with Evan and Tiki on the
Fan. Cinco de Fivo is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything, everywhere. All right. Jeff Ulbrich is the new head coach of the New York Jets, an interim head coach. I'm here to give you the five best interim head coaches in NFL history.
Oh, wow.
I like
and
this
I spent
one.
Some time on this.
In NFL history.
Because yeah. I don't think like there's a lot of them. So I'd be very curious who tops that list.
All right, here we go.
Here we go!
Number five.
And take your time as you read it.
I will take my time, Evan.
Because first pitch is about to happen.
Number five is Rich Bisaccia because he took the Raiders to the playoffs.
Number five?
As you'll see. As an interim head coach, the problem was he obviously didn't get to keep his job beyond that, but a 7-5 record, a really good run.
Staten Island's own, too.
Yeah, right?
It's interesting because my first reaction is Tiki's, which is, wow, he did a really good job.
Yeah. Maybe that's because it's the most immediate interim head coach that we remember doing a good job.
I'll tell you right now, and maybe this just shows my lack of remembering,
right,
but
I honestly can't think of anything well either.
Like, the only other one I could think of, and I don't want to spoil your list, I apologize, is Jason Garrett. Like, remember, he took over as an interim.
Oh, yeah.
And then ended up making the job permanent. But anyhow, continue the list.
Okay, so this list is obviously important because we're wondering what could happen with Jeff Ulbrich. I just want to warn you guys, the next four on the list, the immediacy necessarily wasn't there, but they kept their job.
All right, doesn't matter.
Okay,
go ahead.
Here we go.
Number four.
Jerry Glanville with the Oilers. Okay, he took over, didn't have a great year, but then he proceeded to coach the Oilers to three straight years of playoff berths before 1989 when his team led the league in penalties and he was fired.
I almost forget that he was interim because I feel like he was just hired. He was just a good coach.
I thought the exact same thing.
And he was just hired. I mean, I was a kid still, but whatever. Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
Three straight years of the playoffs after he took over. Here we go.
Number three.
It is Jason Garrett, who took over in 2010. He then continued to coach the Cowboys for a decade with multiple playoff appearances.
One thing about Jason Garrett is, and I'm trying to remember this, when he took over for Wade Phillips, did they call him an interim for the rest of the year and then keep him? Or did Jerry Jones go nuts and say, you're just the head coach?
You know, I think it was pre-Rooney Rule. So I don't think they had to go through that exhaustive process.
Yeah, he had the label of interim.
Okay, right, fair enough.
But I think
after the season, it was just kind of like, you're our head coach.
I think by week 16 or 17, they might have officially named him the head coach going forward, but he took over as the interim.
He was a good one. I mean, he had a decent run, even though everyone hated him by the end.
Okay.
Well, number two.
To deal with Jerry Jones.
This one, Wayne Fontes inherited a 2-11 Lions team.
It's Fontes. I hate to correct you because you're a football czar.
You're right. Bad job by me. 2-11 Lions team, stayed, got Barry Sanders, coached the Lions to four playoff berths.
He didn't have Barry Sanders in his interim status.
Nope.
They drafted Barry Sanders.
Yep, kept his job.
Of course you kept your job.
Here's the problem, by the way. The problem is all of these guys didn't have the immediate success.
Right.
And so far this list is depressing.
Did Wayne Fontes even Did he have a playoff appearance?
Not that year. They were 2-11.
I mean, in his
future. No, he did.
Four.
That's what I'm saying. It worked. Like,
oh, I got it.
Fox,
I got it.
And
Jay,
to different
I'm not
levels.
Giving you anybody that never made the playoffs after they got hired.
I got it.
Well, there's no one who made the playoffs after they got hired other than Rich Pisacci.
Right, but I'm telling you all these other guys. Okay. That's why you guys are going to be focused on the short term, but
I
the point
you.
Is maybe you have some.
All right, let me get to number one.
Right,
number one.
This one stunned me until I did my research. It's Marv Levy.
Marv Levy?
So here's the backstory of Marv Levy.
I Jerry Glanville. I didn't even realize he was an interim.
Marv Levy was an interim head coach of the Bills?
So Marv Levy's background, coached in Kansas City, then was the coach of the Chicago Blitz in the USFL. Was it the USFL? Okay.
Yeah.
He becomes in 1986 a television analyst like Tiki Barber. Okay. The Bills are miserable. They fire their coach and decide they're going to bring in Marv Levy like Jeff Saturday was hired, but I didn't know this.
Really?
Levy finishes the year 2-7. It takes him a couple years, but they keep Levy. Now, he did have a background in coaching. He, of course, leads the Bills to 4 Super Bowl appearances.
Mm. So, first of all, the Marv Levy one's amazing. That really is amazing. I'm not sure how many people knew that. Here's the kind of the issue I have. Not with the list. I think that was a very good single. I don't want all you to take this personal here. Two outs and nobody on. Mania's got the first two guys out. Top of the first, 0-0.
Back to the list, though.
How does Jeff Ulbrich not lead the Jets to the playoffs and keep his job? Impossible.
Well,
dude, it's impossible.
It's funny because it almost creates. So if. Let's back up. So if Woody was thinking about, obviously he was, firing Robert Saleh before the season, and he had in his mind, I kind of like Jeff Ulbrich, and the way you make it possible to not have to go through the whole process and find your head coach is to do what you just did. Get a couple games into the season, fire your head coach, have an interim take the majority of the season.
Right.
So that in everybody's mind, you feel like Jeff Ulbrich's the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have success and you go to the playoffs, who knows whatever happens in the playoffs, you say it's because of this head coach. How can I fire him and go hire somebody else?
Yeah, but
it almost skirts the Rooney Rule. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. No. I get that. I guess the Jets are so unique from all the teams that you put on this list. The New York Jets have expectations that, to me, have not changed just because they made this decision. Like, their expectations are they have to make the playoffs.
Right.
Very good 1-2-3 inning for Sean Manai. Got Bryce Harper to ground out. Mets coming up bottom of the first 0-0. See, here's my point. This is why you keep with us, okay? We're going to tell you what's going on in the Met game, but we'll have other conversations. Mm. There is no way Jeff Ulbrich could not make the playoffs and keep his job. I don't see that scenario.
Right. There's no way he's going, let's say he wins, I don't know, 8 more games. So they're 10-7. And make the playoffs, win a game, get to the championship series or two, or win 2 games, get
look
to the
look at you thinking about baseball.
Sorry, I'm just watching the guys jump around on TV.
No, I understand.
Get to the AFC championship. And then say, you know what, Jeff? We're going to hire Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, I think
that. It just
that,
doesn't make any sense.
I think that if the Jets fulfill the bar, the minimum. See, the minimum coming into this season was they have to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we'd all agree with that. Anything besides making the playoffs, season's a disaster. There's no way you could walk away from this year, non-playoff year, and be okay.
Yeah, right.
They win
then
9.
You clean house.
They would clean house.
Right.
If they made the playoffs, which is the bare minimum, I could see him keeping his job.
Yeah.
I may be screaming on the radio that he should keep his job.
If Ulbrich truly leads the team, they don't crater. And let's just paint the picture. Aaron Rodgers looks so old and so done. The defense is still flying around, and the team finishes this next stretch 6-6, and they're an 8-9 team. They don't make the playoffs.
Right.
But it's very evident the team loves him. The players respond. Woody loves him. You don't think he could come back?
I think it's harder.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
If that's the case, then you're likely thinking of an alternative to Aaron Rodgers.
But remember this.
And Sean, real quick, to go with his point, you're also firing Joe Douglas.
Yeah.
And now you're going to fire Joe Douglas, and Jeff Ulbrich's going to survive as the head coach?
The only reason I say this is it's 6-6 if Rodgers looks old, right? You're talking about the Jets aren't going to be the only opening, right? We see this 5, 6, mm-hmm. 7 openings every year. Who's to say the Jets are going to be the most appealing for a Mike Vrabel or a Slowick or something like that? You might look around, and the top 4 guys might go elsewhere, and then Ulbrich is their best chance.
Not necessarily with the young coach. And tell me if I'm wrong about this, Teague. With the young coach, they better find the right situation, or they're committing kind of job suicide. And I hate to use that term, but they have to be careful, because if you fail in your first job, like Robert Saleh does, you may not get a second.
Yeah.
I think if you're Mike Vrabel or Bill Belichick, not to put them in the same league, but they're successful winning coaches, I think it's more about money and power. And I think if you give them money and power...
for the experienced guys. The guys that we would previously label as retreads, but you know what? you want someone who's had experience when your team is ready to win.
Yes.
If you're a team, honestly, like the Houston Texans last year, when they hired, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name.
D'Amico Ryans.
When they hired D'Amico Ryans, it was like, we're going to take at least a couple of years to rebuild. Let's go young with our head coach, young with our offensive coordinator. We're going to draft a young quarterback and C.J. Stroud. They'll grow together. All of a sudden, they're great right away.
Yeah.
And so you don't expect that. But if you have a team that's ready to win, like the Jets are, built defense, talented roster, as Joe Douglas is, to his credit, put together, you want a staff that's able to win.
No, absolutely.
To help you and know how to win and know how to build the culture that's winning.
Absolutely. We'll get to the Yankees in a few minutes. Let's get back to some of your calls. 888-808-1019. Mo is in Staten Island. What's up, Mo?
What's up, Mo?
Hello, Mo.
What's up, guys? I don't want to... You guys hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good to go. What's up, man?
Hello?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to kind of take you down a little rabbit hole. I want to start with Aaron Rodgers that follows his friend. Mm-hmm. And we see the love connection with Hackett, who's his friend.
Yep.
What if he gets upset about this? And we know that Rodgers is a conspiracy theorist. What if he thinks there's some merit to this Lebanese flag thing? I know I'm a Rodgers junkie. I heard him on Rogan. I heard him on McAfee. He's brought up the Gaza situation. He's brought up using the accusation of anti-Semitic. What if this rubs him the wrong way? What happens in that situation?
Well, I think this situation gets far worse if Aaron Rodgers believes that Robert Saleh was fired for displaying the Lebanese flag on his sweatshirt. And it's a great point to at least ask the question of, what does Aaron think of that, and what does Aaron think of this? I believe that when Woody Johnson said earlier today, I spoke to Aaron on Monday, and we didn't talk about Robert's job status, I believe that Woody skirted the truth.
Yeah, it's not possible that they didn't talk about the head coach.
So he knew. So Woody knew.
Especially because there were lingering, it's past tense, but there were lingering issues with the head coach and the quarterback
in the
public sphere. And so if you're the owner and you're consulting, let's say, with your star quarterback, you're going to ask him about those things.
Exactly.
Because it's a story.
Exactly. That's why I wouldn't be worried about it, because I don't think Aaron Rodgers on Tuesday morning, the way you and I were, the way the midday show guys were, the way all of us were, we weren't blindsided. He wasn't blindsided by it. We all were. Mm-hmm. We didn't see it coming.
No.
You know, when we got that text message, it was like, holy crap.
Right.
But we were blindsided by it. There's no way Aaron Rodgers was blindsided about it, because he probably barked out the orders last night to Woody.
I think there's breaking NFL news as it relates to the Jets, kind of through the butterfly effect.
Davante Adams?
Related. Derek Carr is now expected to miss multiple games with an oblique injury he suffered late last night on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
I only bring this up to say, if it was down to the Saints and Jets based on the familiarity with quarterback, if Derek Carr is out multiple weeks, does that suddenly pull the Saints away from wanting to make this
game? Yeah, I'm trying to think if this is related at all.
What do you mean?
So,
is what related?
Robert, I don't think that Davante Adams knows or has any opinion about Robert Saleh.
Yeah, I would agree.
But he is very close with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. That's why he wants to be a Jet. He doesn't want to be a Jet because...
There's a text conversation between Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, and it's like, yeah, I'll be there, but you don't like this coach? Can we get out of this guy? This is just another layer of conspiracy with lack of answers gives you.
Yeah, I think in the case of Davante Adams, now, I don't know how much power Davante has and where he gets
traded. No, I'm not saying he does. I'm saying Aaron does.
No, I know he does, but I'm saying, like, Davante Adams has a wish list of where he would be traded to.
Yeah.
Now, other than kind of holding up a potential new contract, which you do have power in, it really isn't up to Davante Adams.
Right, because this is not like Major League Baseball where you can have a no-trade clause.
You know,
I think some guys do in the NFL. It's just not typical.
Yeah, it's not a common thing. Like, it happens in the NBA, but it's also not common.
But trading in the NFL is not something you think about when you sign your contract.
Right.
You're not saying, I don't want to be traded. If you sign a big contract, you're like, dude, I'm going to be here for the foreseeable future. That's why I signed a big contract.
But I think in the case of, according to recent reports, I think it was Adam Schefter who had it, his preferred destinations were the New Orleans Saints and the New York Jets because of what you said, familiarity.
Yes.
That hasn't changed with the Jets. Like, Aaron Rodgers is still the quarterback. Whether it's Robert Saleh or Jeff Ulbrich, I don't necessarily think the upheaval with the Jets is going to change Davante Adams' opinion. But in the case of the Saints, if Derek Carr is missing weeks at a time,
yep.
and he was interested in New Orleans because of his familiarity with Derek Carr, then, yeah, of course that changes things. How can it not? Right. Logic says it does. Mets went down 1-2-3 in the bottom of the first inning as well. Lindor just missed a solo home run, but then Vientos struck out, Nimmo struck out. So one in the books out at Citi Field for Game 3 of the Division Series, 0-0. Frank in Staten Island. Hey, Frank.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
All's good.
What's up, man?
You know, everyone's talking about these Aaron Rodgers conspiracy theories about getting Saleh fired. Anyone remember last year when Rob Saleh and Joe Beningo were discussing offensive game plans?
Joe Beningo got him fired? What are you saying here?
No. I'm saying Rob Saleh should have been fired last year when him and Beningo were talking about the quarterback situation.
Bad job by me.
I don't, but Frank, I don't think he should have been fired for that. But at the end of the season, Sean and I, Tiki, we were all arguing about should the Jets fire Robert Saleh. And I think that was the time to do it.
Yeah.
If they were going to make a move, you had more open possibilities on who could be the coach. You had more time to institute your system. You had more time to get things right. So I don't think it was when Joe B accidentally leaked out the communications. And I don't think it was now. The time was the offseason. And that's what functional franchises do. The problem is the Jets aren't exactly a functioning franchise.
No. Right now, it feels like they're emotionally making decisions.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand Woody's frustration because they expected so much. And so, if you have control and you want to make a change, by all means, it's your prerogative to make a change. But it's only going to look good if it works. And ultimately, I think Woody put his team in a stressful moment right now. The team is it's stress right now because everybody in that locker room is wondering what in the hell is going on because nobody knew what was happening.
Yeah. Last night, the Yankees lost Game 2 to the Kansas City Royals. We get into what happened and what they need to fix going into tomorrow night's Game 3. At a rocking Citi Field, Pete Alonso hit an opposite field bomb off of Aaron Nola. If you listened about an hour ago, you can always rewind on the Odyssey app, and you would hear us talking about Pete's ownership of Aaron Nola, that he has 5 career home runs against him in
now
50 at-bats. Yeah, it kind of doesn't count because it's the playoffs, but it does.
It does. Absolutely it does.
But Pete Alonso hit it. Yes, Tiki's right. His 6th career home run against Aaron Nola. And the Mets have a 1-0 lead, bottom of the first inning. Jose Iglesias followed up with a single. So a lot of electricity and excitement at Citi Field. It's funny, I was saying this to Tiki during the break. Manaea has faced 7 batters. He's retired 6 of them. It's been a lot of hard contact.
Yeah.
It's not like Manaea is fooling people. He hasn't got a lot of swing and misses. He struggled to put Kyle Schwarber away, but got him to fly out 400 feet deep to center field. And then there were a couple of balls that were scorched. So he hasn't been dominant, but so far so good. 1-0 Mets, and Manaea has not allowed a
hit. You're feeling good about yourself.
Who, me?
Yes.
I'm feeling very good about myself that we did a 20-minute segment and we talked, you know, very casually about football and whatever. And hold on a second, I'm about to lose my mind because Jesse Winker, he got robbed at the fence.
I don't think he did.
Winker hit one a deep right field. Castellanos made a leaping play and it looked like he caught it and then the ball plopped out of his glove. It was a very weird play in which I guess they're... It was strange.
Right.
Because I thought he caught it.
Right. They're calling it safe. So they went and touched first base. Who was on first? I forgot.
Well, Jose Iglesias was the
runner. On first.
And he went back because he thought the ball was caught.
So he went back and then he rushed to first. And now they appealed. The Phillies appealed to first and see if he tagged up and it was a caught ball. But now they're reviewing?
Well, they're reviewing to see if it was a catch, because if it was a catch, doesn't it turn into a double play because Iglesias would be out since he ran to second?
Yes, but
which is kind of BS, because if they called on the field a hit, how can you then blame the player for running to second base?
Yeah, that's a transfer. It's a transfer?
Right. It looks, I will admit, it looks like it's a transfer play, but then how is Iglesias out?
I don't. Because
they're calling on the field base hit. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, of course.
You
and so on the they initially ruled him safe.
Well, they ruled
but
it.
But now they're reviewing.
They ruled on the field a base hit. So again, it was caught by Castellanos. The ball plopped out of his glove, but it does appear, I admit, on replay review, that it came out of his glove when he was quickly trying to transfer. But they called it base hit. So Iglesias now sees that and says, I got to get to second base. And it wasn't even an easy play to get to second base.
Right.
Because at that point, Castellanos picked up the ball real quick. And it looked like Iglesias may have actually run out of the baseline, too, in trying to get to second. So now they're reviewing if it's a catch or not. And what I'm saying to you is, if it's a catch, isn't it tough to say Jose Iglesias is out? Now we're getting a review on Iglesias. So Iglesias initially ran back.
He's asking.
So yes.
Iglesias is asking, is it a hit? Is it a hit? And because he was going back to first.
He was going back to first, and it looked like Iglesias was signaling it looks like a transfer because he's trying to protect himself as a right. base runner on what should he do. This is a very tough spot for the umps because calling it a double play to me is brutally unfair.
Right.
Is it Sean being an independent observer? Calling that a double play can't happen.
So, yes, here's my also independent observer. This is terrible radio.
Well, I'm trying to describe what happened.
And you're doing a terrible job. I think we should take a call, wait for it to happen, and go back.
I shouldn't describe what happened?
I thought you did a fine job, actually.
Yeah, I don't know why he's ripping me for it. I'm describing what happened.
Because of the non-baseball fans, like, what the hell is going on?
No, it's not that.
The theater of the mind is radio. You
think you're describing what's happening, and you're making it more confusing.
Did I?
Yes.
I guess I'll listen to Sean. I won't listen to the executive producer. He doesn't have an opinion.
I just gave you the opinion.
What was the opinion?
Are you out of your mind? They just put you over like $1 million.
Oh, you like that? That was a good
description. I said you did an amazing job. We're theater of the mind.
Yeah,
you know how Sean is.
Yeah.
If we don't talk about his teams, he feels like he doesn't have any.
Hold on, guys.
Let's update what happened.
Guys, we do have a result. Yep. So they're going to do this right, and I give the umpires credit. They're calling it an out. Because Castellanos appeared to catch it, and it was a transfer play, and they're sending Iglesias back to first base. And if you look at the replay, and I'll describe it as best as I can now that Sean may be self-conscious, Nick Castellanos clearly catches it in his glove, and then as he's appearing to transfer the ball out, that's when the ball comes loose. So I give the umps credit. They could not turn it into a double play, and they didn't. And so now it's just settled. Runner on first, one out, now two outs because Marte popped up.
That was the right way to call it on the field.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to hear from you anymore.
I'm very self-conscious. I'm trying to service the audience.
I tried to do a good job trying to describe
you
it.
Tried.
It's basically like you suck at it.
And then I said you did great, and you didn't even comprehend that I gave an opinion, and and I caught a strike.
You know what? How about this? I'll let Tiki decide. Yeah. Tiki, when I was
I was in the midst of it, too. I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
How did Tiki do? Did he do a bad job describing
it? No, he did a better job. Look, the problem was, that's a confusing play, even if you're actually calling play-by-play.
If you're looking at it, it's a confusing play.
I don't mean to be a jerk. How do you think John Sterling would call that?
You would have called it better.
By the way, speaking of John Sterling, do you have the call from last night with Vinny Pasquantino?
Well, the next batter up is Vinny Pasquantino.
I've never heard that before. That was a good one, though. I love John. Jazz Chisholm. So last night in the Yankee game, Jazz Chisholm made a couple of defensive mistakes. The biggest one was not cutting off a ball that actually led to a base runner going to second and then led to another Kansas City run. So that was miscue number one. That, of course, happened in the fourth inning when the Royals scored all their runs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that defensive miscue, Tiki's on the fact that he's just not used to playing third base.
Of course. I mean, he's looked good at it because he's just a natural athlete. He's got good hand-eye coordination. He's athletic enough to make all the throws that he needs to get to the balls in the holes, etc. But there's a skill to playing the corner.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a ton of reps at
it. Well, I think it's the experience of knowing, okay, yes. In a spot like this, I got to cut the ball off. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two was an error he made in the sixth inning. Luckily, turned out not to be a big deal. Did not come back and bite them. Jazz Chisholm obviously hit the home run in the ninth inning. He was very mm-hmm. pumped up. I got no problem with that. He's trying to pump everybody else up. What Jazz said after the game, I don't know if you'd love Teak. I don't know if Sean would love it as a Yankee fan. And if you haven't heard it, take a listen to Jazz Chisholm after the Yankee loss to Kansas City last night, 4-2.
How different does the series feel now after game two compared to after game one?
Still feels the same that we're going to win it, you know. I don't feel like anybody feels any different, you know. We're going to go out there and do our thing still.
So far, so good.
We still don't feel like any team is better than us. Like you said, we had a lot of missed opportunities tonight, so they just got lucky.
Whoa.
It's the last part, team.
Oh, that's right. Everything was good. It was fantastic until the last part. They just got lucky. You don't get lucky in the playoffs.
You can't say that.
You can't.
You can't. I mean, Salvador Perez hit a ball over the fence. Tommy Pham got a big hit behind in the count.
It's not lucky.
Garrett Hampson got a big. Like, they genuinely put hits together, which the Yankees weren't able to do.
You agree with that, Sean? No, I think two things are true. The Royals did not get lucky. The Royals were the better team through nine innings last night. But I also love that Jazz said it. I love that he is, first of all, this all goes back to when he hit the home run in the ninth. He looked at the dugout pumping him up. He has that great answer.
He's also the one that went out and got hammered after they, clinched the playoffs.
You're pretty mad.
And then came back the next day and performed, and everybody else was kind of like, the sun out yet?
The very, very stale Yankees of the last 10 years have lacked Jazz, Chisholm, enthusiasm, energy. I love all that. So, you know what? If the Royals win this series, that quote is going to come back to haunt Jazz Chisholm, and he will live with it. But I like a Yankee putting it on him, taking a little arrogance, calling the other team out for getting lucky.
I don't mind the arrogance. You don't need to. You don't need to.
Everything.
You don't, but I like it.
Everything he said in that clip. And that's why it was so perfectly described by Tiki. Yeah, that's okay. Okay, that's okay. That's all good. That's good. That's good. Until he gets to the end.
I know.
Like, everything about it was fine. Yeah, we still feel good. We're still confident in ourselves. That's awesome. Like, you should think that way.
Of course.
But the lucky
part. I mean, it's the reality also.
Yeah,
they are the best team left in the American League.
I agree. And I don't think that as bad as Game 2's loss was, one should be discouraged and say they can't win the series. They should still win this series. But the lucky part.
Yeah.
It's a demeaning thing to the team you're facing.
I agree.
It really is. It just comes across like, you don't respect them.
But you don't belong here. You don't belong on the field with us.
Here's the problem. It is the postseason. The series is tied at a game apiece. If the Royals weren't already amped up to come back home, I don't buy in that this is that much extra motivation, especially in playoff games.
Well, I don't buy motivation because you're in the playoffs. What more motivation do you need?
Agreed.
So I agree with that aspect of it. It's just, why put that in the air?
But you don't have to.
It's just, it's not a necessary comment. And I love Jazz. Like, I'm a big Jazz Chisholm guy. I support how fired up he was after the home run. I heard some Yankee fans say they didn't like it because, well, you're still down 4-2.
No, I love it.
He's trying to fire the team up.
It's better.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You know why I like saying it? You know why I like needling the other team after that? Because it beats the hell out of hearing, well, everything is still right in front of us.
Right.
The Yankees are so boring and so stale, and Jazz Chisholm has changed that if it offends the other team and if it's a little arrogant, you know what? I'm just for because it's different.
Yeah. Well, you know what isn't different? The way the Yankees lost last night.
Oh, right? My God.
Like, I think as this season went on, you had some nightmares about the postseason if you're a Yankee fan. Like, you're excited to be there, but is it going to go the same way? And the route that they've taken through all these postseason defeats are the bats completely disappearing. And that continued last night. And that's just the reality. And it goes back to the first inning with Aaron Judge. I don't want to put it all on him, but you kind of have to.
That was a tone-setting at bat, dude.
It really was.
Now, Cal Ragans wasn't throwing a freaking strike.
Mm-hmm.
And those balls, and I know the umpire, the zone was hard to figure out early in that game. Those are tailing out of the strike zone. He didn't let Ragans work at all in that at bat and gave it back.
It's not just him because Austin Wells came up and struck out. Giancarlo Stanton grounded out. And then in the second inning, they also had another opportunity when Volpe got the hit and got the stolen base. So they've had they had opportunities in this game. That wasn't the only one, but they need Aaron Judge to be impactful.
Yes.
They just do. I mean, it's such an obvious thing. It's annoying to talk about, but it's the reality. Like, Aaron Judge hit 58 home runs this season.
Right.
He is a game-changing player. We spend so much time on the radio, all of us, like, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. He's amazing. He's this. He's that. He's brilliant. And he's got to show it in October. Like, I think he can. I'm not telling you he's a choke artist. I don't believe in that crap.
Well,
but he's got
to
do it.
The thing is, you just don't want him to be A-Rod. You just don't want it to be so long down the line. And it's like, oh, finally it happens.
Right.
You want it when the opportunity is right here. And the iron is hot, man. You're the best team in the American League that's remaining. You got teams that don't, as we mentioned before, have the pedigree to be, I don't know, challenging for a championship against the mighty Yankee, so to speak. And your best player is not playing up to snuff.
Right.
It's frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
I get why Yankee fans are frustrated.
You can't
turn on them like Sean tried to and bench them. But
I'm not turning on them.
I can get why you just want to scream in his face. Like, do it.
You're frustrated.
Do what you've done every moment of your major league career.
Because you know what it can do.
Yes.
If Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge, and he dominates the way we've seen him dominate, they win a game like last night.
Well, on the flip side, they're getting nothing out of the other MVP candidate, Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt goes hitless at Yankee Stadium, and you got Cole or Cal Reagans? I've already forgotten his freaking
Cole Reagans
out of the game.
Think Ronald Reagan, and then add an S, and think of Cole
Hamels. I know
Hamels.
His last name. Okay.
Or Garrett Cole, your starting pitcher.
Yeah, or Garrett Cole. Right.
You made him work enough that you got him out of the game and got to that Royals bullpen early enough. You can't have Bobby Witt hitless, Reagans basically out by the fifth, and come back to Kansas City with the series 1-1. It's unacceptable.
Right. Yeah. No, they need Aaron Judge to become Aaron Judge.
By the way, I don't know if you just saw, TBS just showed George Brett again.
That bothered
me. I mean, my God.
You know what else enough. I noticed? You know what else I noticed?
Haven't seen Mike Schmidt once in this Mets series.
And I'm glad Sean did this, because I was going to do it on my own, but he brought it up. I was fascinated by Sean Morash's Twitter feed last night.
Tell because, I was watching it by myself, huh?
Because I like to see what he's thinking.
With an alcoholic beverage?
Yeah.
Actually, no.
Really?
Sober as a goose.
Look at that. Wow. It's a work
thing. So you were just emotionally moved then.
I was so annoyed.
But here's what kind of was, I don't want to say bothered me. It's not the right word to say this bothered me. Fascinated me about Sean watching the Yankee game. He seemed more upset with TBS than he did the Yankees.
Well, it's because he was annoyed with the Yankees' performance and TBS, like, made it worse.
Hand in hand. And I think this is true. I was very annoyed with the Yankees last night. And I said, so I've seen the same Yankee game over and over again where TBS missed the mark. And I'm shameful that I defended Bob Costas. Bob Costas is a Long Island-based broadcaster. I grew up idolizing this guy. And he has fallen from grace. The baseball playoffs are special in North America and America in this country, where it's not about moving up and down the ice or every play in football. It's every pitch could be the difference in the game, to which Costas said.
Right.
And you're in a tense, tight game at Yankee Stadium, and every third word is a shot at George Brett. We got four innings worth of stories about the 70s rival with the Royals and Yankees. And I'm not saying that baseball...
Your point is... 60% of the viewing public right
doesn't
now
care.
Doesn't care or doesn't know what he's talking about.
Exactly. And my only, it's a bigger issue than this. Baseball is meant to be full of stories.
Mm-hmm.
On a Thursday night in July, if TBS has the game and the Yankees rolls, you want to do it, that's fine. You cannot go on and on like that. When we are sitting there cursing at our own team, it becomes so... You know how people always say, and Tiki, you're a broadcaster. Oh, you don't tune in or tune out based on the broadcaster. It became distracting to the moment last night. And this isn't the first time we've been down there with Bob Costas. And when your Yankees are losing and you're a Yankee fan and everything is waxing poetic about George Brett and his freaking ass, I've had enough.
I get it. It's just, it's funny to me that you were more mad at Bob Costas than you were Aaron Judge.
I find that weird.
That's just me. I find it weird.
First of all,
Aaron Judge had an okay day.
He did draw a walk earlier.
Right. And he got a hit. And it's just like, it wasn't impactful. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's an okay day. And that's what Boone said after the game.
Yeah.
Dude, he came up with 2-1 and nobody out. He struck out meekly.
I'm sorry. When the Yankees had down 4-1 in a ball game in the seventh, I should not have a Dizzy Dean reference in 2024.
I love a Dizzy Dean reference.
It's absurd in the postseason.
Meanwhile, now probably 70% are saying, Dizzy Dean?
Exactly.
He literally pitched almost 100 years ago. We're almost at the 100-year mark.